You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. Now, if we're looking at this categorically, the first category, the number one category that we have is intellectual property being stolen from the United States and being transferred to China, for manufacturing and all of these kinds of things. That is the number one problem that we have. And the U.S. government is starting to respond to these things. But is it necessarily the right thing to do? Now, the reason why I brought up 5G technology earlier is because this is the main thrust of essentially what we are talking about here. 5G technology is one of those things that is going to create a much more robust, much more solid wireless infrastructure across the country. Let's say the United States, or, you know, take your pick. It's going to be faster. It's going to have more bandwidth. And as we have devices like IoT absolutely exploding, our wireless technology is going to need to keep up with this because we are going to start running out of the ability to have bandwidth. I know these companies are laying fiber as fast as they can, but 5G is a goal. The goal is to kind of stem the tide, you know, of this looming bandwidth in infrastructure shortage. And so it is a very critical technology that everybody's going to use. Like if I just, you know, decide to, you know, look up something, you know, on my phone, or I decide to make a phone call, or the military decides they want to transfer data to the other side of the planet, let's say battle plans or whatever that is, 5G infrastructure is going to be part of that. Now, Congress has come out and said to the major manufacturers and deployers of this would be the Verizons, the Sprints, the AT&Ts of the world, that they recommend, and I don't believe it's a law yet from everything that I've read, but they are strongly urging U.S. telecom makers not to integrate technological parts from Chinese companies like Huawei, who I just mentioned a little earlier before. And the reason being is that if, let's say, and we'll use Verizon because I believe they have the largest wireless infrastructure in the United States, if Verizon starts deploying 5G cellular towers from Huawei, the fear is that they can just automatically eavesdrop. The Chinese government can automatically start getting telemetry information, GPS location, virtue of, you know, cell tower location. They might be able to get data. They might be able to see who's calling who and record these things, because these things could also be phoning home to the government, or the Chinese government may simply have backdoor access into the 5G cellular network and simply just monitor these things live. And that brings up a really important question, is that as we emerge, you know, as a player, and I recently wrote an article for Forbes on the internet and what it looks like in 2028, we have a problem here, because we can't isolate ourselves. And by we, I mean countries everywhere. You know, I don't care if it's Brazil or France or the United States or Russia or China or, you know, South Africa, whatever it is. We all depend on each other for economy. We depend on each other for technology transfer. We are an integrated solution. I'm sitting here talking to you on a Shure microphone, you know, in a radio station, and this Shure microphone was probably manufactured in China. I think Shure is an American company. I could be completely wrong, but, you know, I'm looking at monitors primarily, you know, that have Chinese parts in them. I'm looking at a soundboard here that has Chinese parts with them. My laptop, you know, is an HP made in China, and we can't escape this. And so when we are looking at this, and I recently did an interview with a person that looks at hardware hacking, we have to be certain that the hardware that we're getting, the critical infrastructure that we're getting from companies that are based outside of the United States are in fact clean and secure. But we can't necessarily stop that progress down, otherwise we slow our own growth. And so if we're looking at what the internet looks like in 2028, and again, I just recently wrote an article for Forbes on that, and I know I've talked about that in the radio show, we are going to see a bisection of what the internet is. We've got 70-ish countries that will be run by China, in terms of China will be supplying the infrastructure and teaching these governments how to lock down the citizens, how to monitor the citizens. They've already been teaching, like they've been teaching the government of Vietnam how to do this for their citizenship. This is coming. Now, if we are also at the same time they are building this authoritarian, heavily censored, heavily monitored internet, we are now getting parts and equipment from China, from these other countries that are in this new internet, if you will, that is very censored for their citizenship. we're getting this technology as well. Can they monitor us even if they're not censoring us? Or are they enabling, let's say, an ever-growing government? I'm not necessarily saying the United States government, but let's say a free government that, let's say, has roots in authoritarianism or wants more control for the greater good, whatever that looks like. Are they then giving that technology and ability out? And the foundation of that starts at the infrastructure level at a free and open society. Not to mention all of the different problems we would have with intelligence gathering and eavesdropping and all of this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, for example, like no senator, congressman, the president of the United States, Supreme Court justice should have his or her emails, you know, intercepted by foreign governments or phone calls read or text messages, you know, captured or anything like that. And if we are putting an infrastructure that is being supplied by, you know, a frenemy, if you will, where we are very economically, you know, cozy with them, but in many ways disagree with their policies, their statements, their growth, etc., it's a problem. And if we're looking at this, China gets to be a player. They have an economy that is soon within the next decade or so to eclipse the United States if all the estimates are correct. They are going to continue to grow, which means they do get a seat at the table. They do get to dictate some policy and direction, not necessarily in the United States, but definitely for smaller countries that are economically dependent. We've done this for decades as well in this country, you know, and you could say to the benefit or detriment, depending on what your viewpoint is. I'll leave that up to you. But when you are a major economic player, oftentimes your policies, your currencies can dictate, you know, what other countries do. And I think if what we are seeing here is true, especially with this new warning and especially with everything that I wrote on for Forbes on for the internet in 2028, and a lot of that is based off of Google's vision of that because they're trying to straddle both sides of the fence by building censored and secured search engines for the authoritarian governments called Dragonfly. I've spoken about that before, as well as keep the quote-unquote free and open one that just data mines us for advertising here. You know, they're straddling both sides, but we have an issue, and it seems like what we are leading up to is some kind of reckoning where there's going to have to be a line in the sand. And so if we're looking at this, what does that future look like? Are we then going to stop accepting technology? Is, you know, my HP laptop that I have sitting here, and this is not, obviously not a plug for HP, but like, you know, is the United States government now going to require HP to have them manufactured in, let's say, a friendly country to us like Brazil or, you know, another manufacturing powerhouse like Thailand or something like that? Or are we simply going to say, OK, well, it's just coming from China and we're going to accept these risks, or we're not going to think about that, just put our heads in the sand like ostriches? I honestly can't tell you. I don't know what that's going to look like. But what I can say is that we have some obvious and real threats that are coming from China in terms of surveillance and eavesdropping. Recently, Bloomberg, and I wrote a story about this, actually got involved with this by interviewing the person that Bloomberg interviewed a while ago. That was my last deep dive, actually, when we're talking about supply chain hacking. We know that it is possible to integrate surveillance right in the manufacturing process. And so when you're getting that computer shipped to you, or that corporation or government is getting that computer or server shipped to them, it's just firing up out of the box already infected and waiting to be surveilled by whatever foreign power has done that. And I'm not talking about necessarily the veracity of the Bloomberg article here so much as I am understanding that supply chain hacking, which is what this call takes place. And so when we are looking at you know, expanding our infrastructure, which we need to do as we have a growing population, we also have a growing device population as well. We don't just have one device per person. We have a phone and a tablet and a laptop and a computer and an Xbox and, you know, everything else. And those things add up. And so we need greater technology. But then do we have to limit who we are trading with, you know, by virtue of this possibility? You tell me, but it's a serious issue that we've got coming on the horizon and we have to deal with. And if we are looking at this holistically from a cybersecurity standpoint, this may mean that we have a slowed incoming product initiative. Meaning if, okay, we're gonna have Huawei, for example, manufacture our 5G cellular towers, well then, as soon as they hit customs and, you know, wherever they're shipped into, Los Angeles, San Diego, Seattle, you know, take your pick, they've got to be uncrated, inspected fully, and then shipped. And what does that do to the logistics? What does that do to the timeliness of this? So there's a lot of things that we have to consider here, you know, with the situation, but we have a problem potentially with creating just pockets of isolationism by virtue of fear of cybersecurity and surveillance, you know, we have a possibility of reshaping the economy because we may or may not be dealing with countries that we've been dealing with in the past. And we have a reshaping of the internet that major corporations and governments around the world are working furiously to achieve for some reason. I don't know why anybody would want to prop up an authoritarian government, but, you know, here we are, and I'll leave that. You have your own opinion on that, I'm sure. I'm not here to dictate at all with that, pardon the pun. You know, but these are all things that are intertwined, and we can't take one thing without the other, which is why this deep dive has essentially been a bit of hot jazz. It's almost kind of like me trying to logically create a brain dump here for everything, because we have this problem, and this problem is not going to go away anytime soon. And we might be able to fix supply chain hacking, but then we have other problems with authoritarianism, integration of technologies, trade embargoes. We're in a trade war right now with China, and all of these things. And so what does the world look like in 10 years? What does it look like in 5 years with this? It's a serious, serious problem. But I would like to believe that I would be able to use, let's say, the new 5G cellular network when it comes out, and actually be secure with that through my carrier. And we know right now it's easy to spoof cell towers and hijack things. And I've talked extensively about how you can protect yourself using things like a VPN and other things. But if I'm making an actual cellular call, it's not going through a VPN typically, if I'm using my cellular provider's service for that. And so it's a balance that we have to run, maintaining our own privacy versus the expectation of privacy that the corporations are supposed to give us, understanding that in some ways they're not giving us privacy because they are going to data mine us, but running that balance between helping yourself and letting others help you. And so what that looks like, I'm not necessarily sure. So this has kind of been your rambling deep dive of the week, but I think it's a really important topic, that really needs discussion. And I'm starting to parse all of this out and write these in articles and everything else. But even in the news segment today, I mean, you see where we're going in terms of increased surveillance, not just at the government level, but also at the corporate level as well. And then you apply nations that aren't necessarily friendly or want to data mine us or surveil us, and then we have a whole other set of problems. So hopefully you guys will chew on that for the next week or two until my next deep dive, and which that one I'm sure will be probably more focused and on point, but it's an important topic to breach. And, you know, hopefully we'll come up with a solution to this that satisfies everybody. And this has been your deep dive of the week. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you, or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And the last couple of weeks have been absolutely crazy for breaches. I mean, we're going to be going all over the world here. And our first stop is actually going to be in Australia. Now, the state of Victoria, obviously they're their own government within Australia, they just had a data breach that exposed their state workers into the dark web, names, addresses, etc., all the personally identifiable information. And so hopefully Victoria, Australia is in the process of cleaning all of that up and giving their people, hopefully, credit monitoring, etc. Now, moving back towards home, we're going to talk about Amazon briefly. Now, just before Black Friday, the biggest shopping day of the year, Amazon sent an email to a ton of their customers basically saying that their names and email addresses had been exposed briefly on the Amazon website, and Amazon has fixed the problem, and there's no need to change your password, etc., etc., etc. But Amazon is notoriously secret when they are dealing with this kind of stuff. We get almost no information whatsoever from them. And so we have no idea if a hacker compromised it, if somebody accidentally flipped a switch, if something in terms of maintenance screwed something up. We're not necessarily sure. But if you are an Amazon subscriber, that's kind of scary. I also don't know the numbers yet, or rather the Amazon numbers, if they're going to publish them on Black Friday to see if this hit them or ding them in terms of sales. I highly doubt it, because You know, we've also been through Cyber Monday, and I'm sure they're going off like gangbusters, but that is your Amazon data breach. And we're going to be heading over to the Europe. Well, I think the United Kingdom, Western Europe, although this company is also in America as well. They're called Vision Direct. What they do is they're a contact lens merchant, and you can go buy your contacts from them online. Now, a hacking group that is known for hitting basically sites where people punch in their credit card information to order stuff, this group is called Magecart, hit Vision Direct, exposing basically patient data, credit card information, et cetera, from Vision Direct's user base. And so if you are a user of Vision Direct and you are listening to this, you may want to contact them or at least change your password. Keeping within Europe, we're going to be talking about the university, the National University of Ireland. They lost a flash drive that they believe contained roughly 900 students' personal information, and they just can't find it. They've just declared it lost. And so, if anything, this kind of underscores why we should not be carrying around flash drives with sensitive data unless the flash drive and the data is encrypted. Because obviously, if somebody picks this up, and it might be harmless, you know, somebody might have just, you know, left it at a Starbucks or whatever the Irish equivalent of a Starbucks is, brought it home and said, oh, free flash drive, and then just wiped it out. I mean, it's not necessarily malicious, but nevertheless, you have a whole bunch of people, 900 students or so, you know, just hanging out there. We don't know what's going to happen with them. Now, from there, we're going to move back into the United States, and we're going to be talking about the United States Postal Service, which is probably the largest and most complex postal service on the face of the earth. They, for a year, left 60 million of their customers, which would be probably you, me, and almost everybody listening to this in the United States, they left them vulnerable because of a product they have called Informed Visibility. Now, if you're not familiar with this, it's a business product that allows business customers to track where their packages are in real time. There is a vulnerability in this that allowed hackers to gain access to, again, 60 million people that were using this. Obviously, the overwhelming majority would be Americans. So that is your news from your postal service. Keeping within the United States, well, at least I think it's within the United States, there was a website that was hit called Hightail Hall. Now, if you're not familiar with this, these people cater to a subculture known as furries. And let me just say, I'm not going to go into a full detail of what a furry is, but let's just say they like to dress up as animals and have a whole lot of fun. And that's all I'm going to say about that. And apparently they have their own website, and it is called Hightail Hall. It literally got breached in August, and amazingly, 411,000 users, their info, you know, et cetera, was exposed by virtue of this. And so that kind of blows my mind that that many people are into that. But hey, you know, whatever floats your boat. Moving on. We're going to be talking about Cars for Kids. You may know them from their jingle that gets in your head, and I will not repeat that jingle because I will be singing it for the next week, but we all know Cars for Kids and their commercials, and they got hit. And what ended up happening is they were storing all of their online transactions in a database. It's called MongoDB. It's pretty popular and common, but they weren't securing it. There was no password on the Cars for Kids database. And so when you went to donate to Cars for Kids and stored your information, they really weren't securing it. And we may not like their jingle, but obviously they're a charity organization. So I'm sure we like what they do. And we don't want to obviously see them hit or their donors, you know, that are, you know, supplying cars and I guess money to their cause. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a company called VoxOx. Now, if you're not familiar with this, this is actually a text messaging service that you can use for yourself or your business that allows you to send text messages on a number that they assigned you. You don't have to use a mobile phone. It's great for centralization for a workforce, et cetera, et cetera. Here's the problem. They had vulnerabilities in their Amazon Web Services configuration. It's not Amazon's fault. It's their fault. It was a misconfiguration that literally exposed tens of millions of text messages to the world. So pretty much if you were sending a text message through VoxOx or your company uses VoxOx, it was exposed and somebody could have read that. And so, you know, have hackers downloaded this? I mean, we don't necessarily know, but the mere fact it's out there is not good because all of these sites typically are being scanned and attempted to be hacked into on a regular basis. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Nordstrom. I know some of my listeners probably shop at Nordstrom's. They just had a data breach as well that got names, bank routing information, and other critical details, not of their customers, though, but of their employees. Well, the hackers were able to get in and get into the employee HR side of things and start pulling names, bank routing information, et cetera, from Nordstrom employees. So if you work at Nordstrom's, I'm sure they've probably told you about this. If not, you might want to inquire with upper management on that one. From there, we're going to keep it in the United States, and we're going to go to the state of Oregon. And so the state of Oregon, like most states, has the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. They got hit in October, and over 1,000 Oregonians, you know, however you guys pronounce it. I'm obviously not from Oregon, but the radio stations I have there, you guys are awesome. But heads up, if you have Medicare or Medicaid, over 1,000 people had their personal information exposed in Oregon. So my listeners in Oregon, and I've got a few stations out there, please make sure that you guys are keeping that safe, even if I can't pronounce how you guys what you guys call yourself. And we're going to head a little north of Oregon to the state of Washington. Now, the Southwest Washington Regional Surgical Center basically was compromised by hackers as well, and about 2,400 patients had their personal information hit. Now, they're reporting that this happened between May and August of this year, and it was a compromised email box that basically had information that the hackers were able to scrape out of that. They've since fixed the situation, but if you are in Washington and you utilize the Southwest Washington Regional Surgical Center, you may want to inquire with them to see if you're there. And I also know I've got radio stations in their area as well that are playing the Deep Dive radio show. So please, guys, make sure you are keeping safe. Now, to end the round, we're going to go back across to Scotland and the University Hospital of Crosshouse of Kilmarnock. And the reason why I ended with this one is because it is, I think, a little amusing, but also kind of telling of where we are. And so stick with me for a minute. One of the medical workers, you know, just regular guy, regular bloke, if you will, you know, going about his day, single guy, and sees a cute patient, maybe two, maybe three, maybe 10, and says, oh, hey, I wouldn't mind getting to know her in some manner. And so he started looking up the patients that he found attractive or cute or whatever the term you want to use to get their information so that he could call them and ask them out on dates, you know. And we have a whole bunch of laws against that in the United States and Canada, you know, HIPAA, for example. And I know Canada's got one. And obviously with the National Health Service in the United Kingdom, they've got a whole bunch of data privacy laws for this. And he has since been suspended. I do not know if he's been fired. I couldn't find that out, but I did look. But it kind of underscores what we have in terms of operational security, not just necessarily for medical practices, but for everything that we do. I mean, if our employees or, you know, even us have access to sensitive data that we don't necessarily need access to, then, you know, why have it there? You know, we need training on this. We need an understanding, you know, and if it had been pounded into this guy that says, hey, you can't do this or you're going to lose your job or worse, you might be criminally prosecuted for this. That would have been the deterrent maybe that this person needed. But no, I mean, there obviously wasn't that control in place. And he's thinking to himself, oh, like, well, the patient in, you know, bed 6A is kind of cute. I wonder if she's single. Let me go look her up. Let me go get her phone number and then, you know, ask her out to the local pub or, you know, whatever they do in Scotland. Caper tossing, I think, as well, is one of their things. So you never know. But in the end, he got suspended when it was caught. And I'm just wondering, because the article didn't mention, you know, if the patients were complaining, being like, yeah, who is this guy? Like, I was just at the hospital. Why is he looking at my stuff? Like, how do they catch him? You know, that was not revealed. But, you know, we'll see. And hopefully lesson learned for him. And those are your breaches of the week worldwide. I hope you weren't affected. And if you were, let me know. Let me know. I'm always curious to hear user feedback on that, especially in the areas, you know, where I've got radio shows and anywhere else. And if you're listening to me on the cloud, you know, on SoundCloud or iTunes or whatever, let me know as well. My contact information is there. I'm always curious. But those are your breaches of the week. And now for the tip of the week. And if you have an idea for a tip of the week, I am all ears. I'm more than happy to entertain anything. You can find me at Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP, or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com, and I'm more than happy to give you a shout out here for your tip of the week. Let's begin. And this week's tip of the week actually comes from a recent scam that is going around that you guys need to be aware of. So it's not necessarily a tip so much as it is an awareness of awareness of a problem. You may have received an email that basically says something along the lines of, and we have received numerous complaints from our clients, as well as some of our staff getting these to personal emails. It'll say something like this. It'll basically say something like this. I have very bad news for you. And then it'll give a date and it'll say, on this day, I hacked your OS or operating system and got full access to your account email address, blah, blah, blah. And then it will give you a password. And oftentimes it's a legitimate password or an old password that you may have. And it says, so you can change the password, but understand, like, you know, my malware will capture it every time. And then it goes on to say things like, I know, like, you've been into some really nasty things and of adult themed nature and blah, 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 blah. If you don't want me to send this to everybody in your address book, please send me, you know, a Bitcoin for, you know, $500, $1,000, you know, whatever it is, and all of this. Now, this has freaked a lot of people out because it has gotten a legitimate email address. So, you know, it's like your whatever at whatever.com, and then it has a password. And we've gotten some people that said, oh my God, this is a password that I use or I've used. Is this person in? And the answer to that is no. What a lot of people don't realize is that passwords, usernames and passwords, are for sale on the dark web all the time. A lot of these things get dumped, especially older lists get dumped for free into dark web, like identity theft forums, hacker forums, broker forums, all this kind of stuff. And so you can pretty much just grab this list and then create a form letter, email everybody on the list with their specific password. Now, a reason why a lot of people have come to us and said, well, oh my God, like this is the password I use, is because these people have not changed their passwords in any real, like with any real frequency, you know, and we all have that one person, and you might be that person listening to this where you haven't changed your password in years. And the same password for social media like Facebook is the same password you'd use for your bank and all of that. You shouldn't obviously do those things. But if you're getting emails like that, they're not real. As always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.